Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network on tour live at Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. I am Hannah Forden, and I am sitting down with the two gentlemen behind two of my very favorite New England-based beverage brands. I have Luke Schmucker from Shaxbury Cider, my dear friend, and my new friend, Jeff Pilletshore, who is the marketing director of Allagash Brewing Company. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
First off, I feel like we should probably taste some beer. I love getting the can cracking noise going. So, Jeff, what do you suggest we start with?
I think we always have to start with Allagash White, the first beer we ever brewed, and now in cans.
Awesome. I can get this pouring for us.
Here, let me rouse that beer for you first.
Oh,
make sure that we get the
thank
yeast.
Thank you. So right now, Jeff's turning the can upside down.
There we go.
Pro tip for the listeners. Awesome. So you guys are based in Portland, Maine, but you make Belgian-style beer. So what is the spin that you're putting on it as New Englanders making a traditional Belgian product?
Yeah, you know, so we were founded in 1995, and This is our 25th anniversary year that we're going into.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. And, you know, it was a very different world in beer at that time when Rob Todd founded us. You know, most people had not had anything other than a macro beer. There were very few craft breweries. And so the idea of giving people new experiences with beer was something that was really important to him. And so he actually pursued this Belgian-style wit beer because it was hard to make and because few other people were making it. He liked the challenge of it, and he is really ingrained in a culture in the company that we do things that are giving new experiences to people in beer. And so he loved Belgian-inspired beers, but I think that idea of innovation and novelty was almost what came first. And, you know, we don't, when we've done other things that are really derived from a Belgian tradition, we work very hard to make it clear that they're our own and that we're not taking anything from them. So when we did a spontaneous fermented beer, we didn't call it a lambic or a goose. We came up with our own name for it as a cool ship inspired beer. So it's very important to us to draw that inspiration from them and then just brew things that give people different experiences.
I mean, what do you guys think? I think the through line of conversations at Good Food Mercantile is people are like, I'm doing the hardest thing I can possibly do, and I love it, right? Like, that's your founding story, and I know you guys do that.
Yeah, I think that we're all kind of gluttons for punishment when it comes to people that are at the Good Food Awards, because everyone is so intensely focused on making the best product that they can. It's not always the easiest way to make something, but I think especially with the group of people that's here, they understand the quality and the difference, and the easy way is not always the best way when it comes down to it.
And I'm excited to hear a little bit about the new initiatives. I think it is fairly new that you guys are doing, that you're a B Corp. Right?
Yes, yeah.
So a little bit of background for folks who might not be familiar with what a B Corp is, but it's a mission-driven for-profit company. So HRN is a mission-driven nonprofit company, but for you, it's a little bit different. So I'm really excited to hear about what prompted that decision and how that's changed the way that you do business.
Yeah, so, you know, the kind of the inspired idea behind B Corp is that it's using business as a force for good. And that's obvious. That's something that has been important to us from day one, but it wasn't always, I think, conscious for us. You know, there was definitely a good 10 years at Allagash Brewing when Rob was one of only a few employees, and it was basically just surviving. But again, always sticking to what mattered and why he'd gotten into the business in the first place. But this idea of giving back to the community, of doing things the right way, was always in his belief system, and then it sort of became in our belief system. And then, you know, craft beer is such a collaborative environment. You know, you can walk into any other brewery anywhere, and they'll treat you like an honored guest. And it honestly, it doesn't matter whether you're bigger or smaller, it works always. And that's something that's always inspired us. And so as we've grown, and we're now in this extraordinary place where we get to give back to other organizations, we were really inspired by what we saw in the B Corp community, which was an opportunity to really learn from other organizations who could inspire us to sort of challenge ourselves even more. You know, Rob likes to say that, you know, he thought, because we frankly are proud of the things that we've done, he thought, we can walk in and we can get that B Corp certification. And what we found was it was really hard. It is a rigorous third-party test that has over 70 pages to it. And they are very challenging questions. It takes, from the moment that you finally decide to push go on this, it's months and months of hard work of pulling in data from many different areas. And we were really humbled by the experience, and it showed us how much more we had to grow. So in a sense, the process of going through it actually made us more committed and more respectful of what this meant. That once we finally got the certification, and the way it works is it's a point system. They assign points for different things, whether it's how you treat your suppliers or how you treat your employees or what you do with your waste. And it's based out of 200 points, and you have to get 80 to qualify. We basically got 83 points, and we were like, that's amazing that we were able to qualify, sort of just got over the threshold, and now we get to join this community where we get to challenge ourselves to grow even more. So it's really about helping push ourselves to that next level.
I think that kind of speaks to the point of the Good Food Awards, too. When you talk about these additional steps that you go through and those questions that are asked, when our dry cider won the tasting panel for cider as a category, that's only half the battle. The additional questions that were sent over to me after winning that were, you know, making great ciders hard enough, but like going through the process. And for us, it was one of the main questions that stood out was, you know, honestly, they were asking, most of the products that are at Good Food Awards are domestic, and Shaftesbury Dry has Dabinet from Dragon Orchard in the UK in it as well, which is something that we're proud of because we love working with Simon. We think that his Dabinet's incredible, but they were like, why do you do that? You're being up in Vermont with all those cider producers. And for us, it was a great excuse to, we think so much about everything that we do, it was a great excuse to tell the story of like, we've been inspired by Simon. Not only are we using his Dabinet, but we're taking cuttings from his apple trees over in UK and we're propagating those back in Vermont, which is creating a higher value crop for local farmers using Dabinet apples, which aren't typically grown as much in Vermont. So, you know, it's something that when you care that much about the ingredients that you're putting into your product, it totally makes sense. But without being able to tell that story to someone, they may not understand. It's like, oh, there's some UK apples in the cider. It's like, we love high tannin Dabinet. I mean, you've come up to Vermont and seen Dabinet. I mean, it's a significantly different apple biting into it than a lot of the other stuff. So it's a, I think that going through those processes helps you define the core reason of why you're doing some of the things that you're doing as a company. And it, I think that processes like that help you focus.
Yeah. And I think something that both of your brands have in common too is how deeply engaged it is with the local community of like where it's made, where it's grown, and also the land itself. So, you know, Shaftesbury has a Lost Apple Project where like you're preserving seeds that aren't being propagated by anyone else and sort of introducing new apples to the market. And I know Allagash is doing a lot of work surrounding water usage. So tell me a little bit more about that and what it, how, because beer requires a great deal of water.
Yes, it does.
Right. That's something I know.
It does. Yes, you're absolutely right. I think actually that highlights, I mean, first of all, your points about the Good Food Awards are really fantastic and well taken. And I think it's been such a humbling experience to be a part of this community. And frankly, something I want to be able to bring back to the entire community at Allagash. It's really been such an honor. And I think one of the things that we've seen over the years is that beer is such a simple product that is one of the oldest beverages that is that, you know, humans have ever produced, and most people don't really understand how it's made. There's a tremendous sort of, I think I understand what goes into it, or I kind of get it, but there's still a distance from it. And so, you know, there's a story that sounds too made up to be true, but, you know, one of our current growers of barley didn't actually realize that barley was used in beer. They grew barley as a rotational crop for potatoes up in the northern part of Maine, and they wanted to get into the beer producing into the beer business. They were thinking of starting up a hop farm, and we're like, but you grow barley. They're like, oh, it's barley and beer. So it's just a reminder that even people who are close to the crops don't always have that connection. So for us, growing close to the source has been important on so many levels. Water is one of the most recent things that we've done. We're lucky to get our water from Sebago Lake, which is one of the cleanest water sources, municipal water sources in the United States. As independently tested, it doesn't require treatment, and it's one of only a few dozen sources out of thousands in the United States that are like that. So we're starting from the enviable position of wanting to preserve something that's already in a good place. So we've started something, and then other breweries and other companies have joined up with us. Rising Tide Brewing Company has joined in as well in Portland, Maine, to donate a portion of the proceeds from our beer, 10 cents per barrel, to a new organization called Sebago Lakes Watershed, which actually is there to preserve and protect that as a resource for generations to come, to ensure that we don't mess something up that's already good. And then separately, we've been honored to lend our voice to other initiatives, Maine Brewshed Alliance, and then other national organizations who are fighting on behalf of keeping our water clean. And then separately, we've been working with Maine farmers and maltsters to really grow the Maine grain economy. You know, if you look at maps that go back to the late 1800s, there was a tremendous amount of grain production in Maine, which is a surprise to many people, us included. But it's still there. It still works to a great extent. And so close to 5 years ago, Rob, and this is one of the great things about working for a fully independent company where the founder owns all the shares, Rob said, you know what we should do? We should say that we are going to buy 1 million pounds of Maine-grown and malted grain. And we said, yeah, I think that's a great idea. And so by 2021, we pledged to buy 1 million pounds. In 2020, we'll be at about 700,000, and then we'll be at that level. And so that means that we get to work directly with these farmers. That gives them the space to be able to grow and invest. And then they're just amazing partners and friends. I mean, they literally welcome us into their homes. They cook for us. We've camped out on their farms. We know them. We know their kids. And it's an extraordinary experience for us at the brewery.
Awesome. And that definitely reminds me of, I know a lot of how Shaxbury does their business. And some of our listeners probably know about this. But do you want to talk a little bit about the partnerships that you have with the local apple growers and various Vermont apple geniuses that you collaborate with?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like to a normal heritage radio network that I probably sound like a broken record if you listen to me speak, but I just, apples grow like weeds in Vermont. I've used that line multiple times. They were used as property lines. They were, you know, there's so many apple farmers up in Vermont, and it's such a big part of who the state is in itself that at Shaxbury, we're really trying to take something that's already a huge part of where we're from and create more of a value-added crop for local farmers by using cider apples, which have a higher value than more traditional culinary fruit. It's also a great way, like when we were talking earlier, if you're a Vermont farmer and you're looking at the highest value of the apples that you have, everything has to be so visually perfect, where for cider, it's just so great to be like, give us your uglies. Like, yeah, we'll take, you know, anything.
And it's the same with, like, barley being a cover crop. Like,
exactly.
It's so funny that it never occurred to be like, people eat barley, people drink barley, and that just expands, like, revenue streams for the farmers and also, like, more product for you
Absolutely.
To work with.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys are both marketing geniuses. So
that's, I don't know. That's maybe one of us is. I got some work to do, but I'll take it.
Let the record show that we're both looking to the side.
You're both very bashful marketing geniuses. So I'm always like, I feel like getting the behind the scenes perspective on like how to effectively like tell the story of special brands like this. And like, we're at Good Food, like, everyone has a good story who's in this room. We know that, like, everyone works incredibly hard. They're doing something because they love it, because they know it brings people joy, because they know it's giving back to their community. And I know, like, obviously, Luke, you're one of the founders of your company. Jeff, I don't know how long you've been with Allagash, but, like, what makes for an effective story? Like, how do you do that?
So, you know, I think, as you talk, I think the thing that is more important than anything else is that you have to want to do it. And obviously, that sort of seems like it goes without saying, but I think that it could be very easy to think, oh, people will know, or people won't care, or there's any reason to sort of demur or sort of push that to the side. And I think that, you know, we got to a place as an organization where we really did care about helping people understand us and sort of seeing that it wasn't boasting, it wasn't being immodest to simply share stuff out with the world. And Rob, founder, really sets the tone for that. You know, from the moment that I started, so I've been with the organization close to 6 years,
wow,
which feels like a blink of an eye in the history of the company. You know, still feel like the new kid, but the, you know, from the moment that I started, his desire about what we did was always, you know, did you tweet that out? You know, did you share that on Facebook? It wasn't how many likes did it get? It wasn't, you know, what was your engagement? It wasn't what's your media strategy? It was, did you tell the world about this thing?
Yeah.
And so I think that having the will to understand that you need to do that then allows you to say, well, we better actually have a plan in place to do it. You know, we better have a person who's good at it. If that's the founder, awesome. If it's not the founder, find somebody else who can do that and then dedicate the resources to it, because that your why, what you're doing, is a value to the consumer. You know, I just every person who's here at the Good Food Awards, their product is more delicious and more enjoyable and more valuable to me, knowing their stories behind it. So you're actually, if you understand that you're denying something to the consumer by not sharing that story with them, then I think it's then up to you as a entrepreneur, business owner, manager to then take whatever steps are right for you to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Like, it's, you're giving the consumer a gift. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest challenges that we face, and anyone here faces, is what most of these people are doing, probably everyone, is incredibly complex. And there's so much that goes into it. And there are so many things that make all of these products so unique that the real art is to be able to take that and boil it down to like something that could fit onto a 12-ounce or sometimes in our case an 8-ounce can. Like, how do you get the core understanding of what this product is? Like, we've gone simplistic in a lot of terms where we have a cider that's called dry, we have a cider that's called rosé. So like, from us as a messaging standpoint, that gets a point across, people know how it's going to taste. But you take a cider like Arla, that's a blend of like Vermont, New England apples, and fruit from Ainara in Petrategui, in Astigarraga, Spain, and you have native yeast fermented Basque cider blended with, you know, our apples, and combining those two things together and trying to get across, like, how is this? And it's fermented bone dry, so there's just so much that goes into it from the process side and trying to isolate what's going to resonate with the consumer and what someone who's seeing this product is like, I should try this, like what's in here, and then properly setting their expectation on what's inside of that can and what it's going to taste like. I think that that's one of the most challenging but one of the most exciting parts of what we do on the marketing side, of narrowing it down to like, how do I get a core message across to a consumer of how this product is going to taste? And it's like, I want it to look good, but I also want to properly explain to people, because I've seen products that I'm just like, that's a great looking thing, but I have no idea what it is. So like, from my standpoint and what we're thinking about, it's like, how do we convey information in a way that helps someone make an informed decision on what they're going to buy?
Yeah. And Jeff, do you find that are consumers savvy about the B Corp certification? I know that's something that I only learned about recently. And, you know, it's a seal on the product. are you getting a response from your customers?
We're very early on in the process, yeah. And we haven't gotten to a place where we've started even putting it on the packaging yet. What people have been very, very positive in the initial response to us. I think what we've seen, and the great thing is we've gotten to talk to a lot of other B Corps and get their take on it. And I think one of the things that we've heard is people don't know what it is, but they like it when it's explained to them.
Yeah.
So the key is to find those environments when you can sort of proudly claim it and then let people understand it. That, you know, it's not even like putting an organic symbol that more people can recognize and understand, even if they would struggle to explain it. They at least recognize it. It's not there, but if you're willing to sort of take a place of education and sort of stick with it, then I think it can be very impactful.
Awesome. And just in closing, what makes New England beverage makers so cool? What's the perspective? Usually Luke is like Captain Vermont.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I lean back into is like being from Connecticut, and now like our company's based in Vermont, my partners are up in Vermont, but I live in Southern California, which allows me to have this beautiful nostalgic view of New England, where like when I think back about it, living in a place that's as densely populated as San Diego, the idea of space and the amount of creativity that surrounds that, it's just, I think that both Allagash and Shaxbury are companies that both lean into a kind of outdoorsy vibe anyways. So for me, one of the things that's so special is that with that space, you end up just naturally being closer to people that are producing some of the core ingredients that go into your product. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing that's so special about that is we're not just in this dense urban environment trying to talk about apples. Like, we're dangerously close to the people that are producing apples. And you hear from them. And you know, there's more of a direct line of communication. So we can't just sit in a urban setting and say how amazing our products are and why you should buy them. Like, we're going to have, you know, a local apple farmer in our ear talking to us about why they think that we should be using this versus that.
Yeah, so you're closer to the source.
Yeah.
That is very true. The only thing I will add is from my own personal experience, I sort of took a inverse journey to yours in that I'm originally from Southern California and I now live in Northern New England. So, you know, I sort of always feel a little bit like an outsider. And Rob is from Massachusetts, went to school in Vermont, and then decided to found the company in Maine. And I think that there is a spirit of self-reliance and sort of thriftiness that is baked into things that people do that they don't even necessarily think about. You know, we've been recycling and reusing materials because it's just the right thing to do. You know, it's just like that's what you do. You know, there's a sense of understanding that it's up to you and up to your neighbors. And then speaking from Maine specifically, there's such a cohesive identity to the state of Maine. It is a massive state. It's hard for people who are not there to really fathom that if you drive from our brewery in Portland, Maine, you can get to Brooklyn in the same amount of time as you can get to the top of Maine. It's really far. But no matter where you're from in Maine, if you ask somebody, where is this from? It's Maine beer. And that identity built out of tourism, built out of whatever, I think does reinforce a sort of it's a group of people who believe that they're all in it together. So building on what you were saying, that proximity to the growers, the sort of thriftiness, that sense that you can't escape and just sort of push it off somewhere else, we're all in it together. It makes for a pretty fantastic environment.
I love that.
So true. It's like, I feel like being down in Southern California now, like thinking about growing up in New England, like life in New England's not the easiest thing. So, like,
that's
there's
cold.
Kind of, like, we kind of went through this together, we're all in it together mentality of New Englanders that's just so unique. In conjunction with the thriftiness and, I'll just figure it out and I'm just going to do it myself and we're just going to take care of this.
Yeah, a little suffering is good for you.
It's good for you.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, that's all the time that we have, but thank you guys so much. That was really fun, and I love sipping on Allagash while we chat. So thanks so much to Jeff Pilichor from Allagash and Luke Schmucker from Shaxbury. I'm Hannah Forden, and this is Heritage Radio Network on tour at the Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. Thanks so much to Good Food for having us and to the Julia Child Foundation for making our on-tour coverage possible.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.